We're supposed to talk tonight about hospitality, but I thought along the way, if you had some questions that I could help you answer or try to answer, because Pam Rogers and Laurie Engel have been two of my biggest encouragers in letting me know that I had some things that I didn't know I had. And Laurie used to tell me all the time when she'd come over here that she'd either see things or feel things or something would be done for her that encouraged her and made her think that she was something special. Then she'd see the arrangement of something and like it, you know, and the way it made her feel. So most of the things I do because of the way they make me feel. And that's the reason I wanted you to walk through the apartment and just see how you responded to stuff. And just even to think back to when you came up to the door. Now, I know there are lots of things wrong. And if I had my act put together, I'd have had everything perfect for you. But just think back when you walked up the stairs and came to the door. How did you feel when you walked up? How did you feel when I responded and when you came into the apartment? If you'd help me.
My first response when I saw the door knocker that said quiet, I thought, how special, you know, because it was real personal. You know, because apartments are so, sometimes they can be so impersonal. This is going to be homey.
I'll tell you about that door knocker. My mother got that for me for Christmas one year. She got all of us kids one. And, of course, my brothers are married, and that's fine when you're married. But when you live in an apartment and when you live with other girls and it's only your name that's on it, I really questioned it, and I didn't put it up for a while. And I asked the girls about it and how they'd feel, you know, if, you know, my name was on there. And most of them wanted the knocker. You know, so they didn't care that it had white on it. So they said it was fine. So, good. That's a good thing. That's the first time anybody's ever mentioned that.
Well, I don't know if the door was, I assume the door was shut. Mm-hmm. When I walked up, the door was open. And to me, it just made, you know, like you were expecting someone. Mm-hmm. It was open door. And then just as I got to the door, I heard you acknowledge my presence. And so that made me feel welcome. Okay. And then you walked out in and here into the place where I first came. Made you feel very welcome.
Okay. What do you call hospitality? Or what do you mean when you're thinking about that? What is it you're looking for?
Warmth.
That's a good one.
Making someone feel comfortable.
Okay.
I would say, yeah, and like meeting the needs of your guests or the people that you're honoring.
Okay.
I think that's important. Meeting people you're honoring, that shows what your whole attitude about it is.
Mm-hmm. Can you think of some illustrations in the scripture of hospitality, people who are hospitable, or can you think of verses that talk about being hospitable?
The Good Samaritan was hospitable.
Okay. How was he hospitable?
By going out of his way to meet the need of someone who obviously had need.
Okay.
To the point of doing something that his people normally didn't do.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Something above and beyond the call of duty. I think along the way you'll discover that hospitality includes a number of characteristics and qualities. It's hardly ever anything just by itself. But it works up into more of an atmosphere or an attitude. And then the actions that come out of that attitude or that atmosphere are the characteristics or qualities of other things, you know, like the serving or giving up rights or whatever else you want to include in it. But can you think of some verses or other illustrations of hospitality?
The verse that we used at the banquet the other night, Psalm 2:4, just about bringing us into his banquet hall and then, you know, covering us with love, making us feel really special. Mm-hmm.
Put some Bibles over there too, and if you have your own, that's fine. But let's just look up a few verses here that talk about hospitality and how we're to treat each other. And the very first one I think about is Psalm 23. And verses 5 and 6.
Psalm
23. One of you can read that out loud for us. And
thou dost prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. Thou hast anointed my head with oil, my cup overflows. Surely goodness and loving kindness will follow me all the days of my life. I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever.
Okay. And of course, Jesus will be our prime example of hospitality or being hospitable. But even here, the specialness that we have when God prepares for us, even in the midst of our enemies. And, you know, when time's crowding in on you, or when there's frustration and anger, those are enemies to us. And God prepares a table for you. He sets up a place for you. And a cross-reference I use on that one is 1 John 14:2. Which says that Jesus has gone to prepare a place for us. And so one of the acts of hospitality is to be prepared and to prepare a place to think for the other person. And there are lots of ways that can be done, and we'll talk about some of those later on, and you'll think of some things. But one of the things my mother always does for me when I go home is that she always scoots her clothes over to one side. We have to share the same closet. So when I come home, there's always a little section there for me to hang my clothes. And she always has clean sheets on the bed. We have to share the same bed usually. And so she's prepared the closet for me, and she's put fresh sheets on the bed so that I'll know that she was expecting me. She was looking for me to come home. And she's all usually, you know, clean the house a little extra special instead of just living in it like she does with her. She's involved in several church organizations and stuff, and she's all the time got some major responsibility with it, so she has all these little booklets and cutouts and things, you know, that she's working with. I wonder where I inherited. look in Leviticus 19:33-34. This is one of Sam Mathias' favorite verses. Right. Leviticus 19:33-34. He used this a lot while he was here with us on the staff. Can somebody read that for us and let's know who to be hospitable to?
33:34. This is out of Living. It says, do not take advantage of foreigners in your land. Do not wrong. They must be treated like any other citizen. Love them as yourself, for remember that you too were foreigners in the land of Egypt. I am Jehovah your God.
Okay. Every one of us at some time or another is a stranger in some place. And there are strangers around us all the time. They may be people we know, but they're not really well known to us. And how we're to treat them and how we're to respond to them, and to remember that we are strangers somewhere at some time or another. And if you were in a situation like Pam Jones has been in this semester, And suppose that somebody came to your home to live for a week or 3 weeks or a month or several months. What is it that you would need to have done so that that person would feel comfortable? And we're not going to try to dissect whether or not the man's have been hospitable, but I'm just using this illustration because she's been a stranger in their home, okay? And so if somebody came to your home, what would you do to help them feel a part of your home, whether they're overnight guests or long-term? What are the things that you need to have done for you so that you feel a part of things? Maybe approach it from that angle.
It makes me more at ease when the host or whoever will let me help.
Okay.
Rather than just sit in the room. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Not providing, this is maybe more faculty, but providing with a key so they have the freedom to come.
That's good. It's the practical things that let us know about hospitality, I think.
Do you, like you said, make room in the closet, maybe empty your drawer out, or you say, you know,
okay.
If you want to. If you know they're going to be clean up, you could always, you know, lay towels out. Because they don't really know where to look for towels.
That's right.
They don't want to go through all their closets. Lay those out for them. That way they'll know they're comfortable than usual. Clean facilities.
Yeah, or make sure they know where everything is that they're going to need and encourage them to go get it.
Okay.
I think what Kim said, building on that, is maybe just to continue to verbalize to them to feel welcome, that they are welcome, that this is your home. Because we can do whole things that
communicate,
but
a lot of
times we still need to
hear. Everybody operates differently in their families. And there's some people whose homes you go into and they never stop what they're doing. They just draw you in and you become a part of that. Whatever activity it is they're doing, they never stop just to sit and talk with you. And there are others who would not do one thing while you're there. They will just stop and visit and sit and, you know, and offer you something to drink or whatever. And then after you leave, if you're just an overnight guest or whatever, then you they'll go do their activities. So you'll develop a lifestyle in your own homes, what you do and how you act and respond. But you will probably do both of them at one time or another, depending on what the circumstances are, maybe who it is. Generally, it has to do with the circumstances. You know, as to what other things you have that are pressing you. And if it's a long-term visitor in your home, long-term meaning more than overnight, then you may want to visit with them a little while when they first come in, and then, as Kim suggested, to go through and show them where everything is. And I have... feel like that's real important because I have been here in this apartment since the night I moved to Norman. Therefore, this is called my apartment because I've been here the longest. And the girls who come in hardly have to contribute anything because I have it. I've been keeping house now for 22, 23 years since I first, you know, graduated from high school. I moved into a dorm in college where we did our own cooking. And so I still have some of the things I started off with back then, you know, and I'd send in box tops to get these little cake pans and measuring cups and that kind of stuff. And I've just acquired things because I've had longer to acquire them. And so I have to work at allowing the girls to have things of their own that they can place and put, because you never really feel like it's yours until you've got something that identifies you in it. And so that was real hard for me to do at first. I did not see the need for that, you know, because I was very immature and very dogmatic about stuff, and we'll do this and so, and it'll be this way, and I've already got this and so, you know. And it's been real hard on me to let go and to let people have a place. But it's just like with all the books you'll read about children needing to have a drawer of their own. It's their private thing. They need a place for their stuff. And if you get a man in your home, well, then he needs to have a place for his stuff, and it's his stuff. It's not yours. And he doesn't really want it rearranged. It means something to him the way it is, and and it doesn't make sense to you. But that particular thing is kind of has its parallel in that lots of times cut flowers don't mean a thing to a God, but he'll get them for you because he knows they're special to you. And so for him to have a place to put his things and leave them like he wants to, and you can just laugh and say that's his pile or his place or whatever. Look at Leviticus 24:27. Here's another verse that's quite similar to what we just read. That doesn't make sense. 22, Luke 24:22. There shall be one standard for you. It shall be for the stranger as well as for the native. For I am the Lord your God. And the deal is that to me, that says that everybody who comes in should be treated equally alike, and that you should give as much consideration to your family members as you would to a visitor, and as much consideration to a visitor as you would to your family. And you'll find some people who pay more attention to their family members than they do to people, guests in their home. And then you'll find the reverse is true. And many times it's probably more so that you pay more attention to the stranger than you do to the family. But back when this was written, the family was the key circle and was the social outlet. So they had to pay more attention to the strangers who passed through, because every tribe and every clan was very exclusive in its own right and had certain standards and guidelines and stuff. Look at 1 Peter 4:9-11. And one of you could read this. 1 Peter 4:9-11.
Practice hospitality toward one another without grumbling. Let each one serve one another to the measure of his endowment as good stewards of God's richly varied grace.
3:11.
If you are speaking, let it be as speaking God's messages. If you are serving, let it be with the strength that God supplies, so that in all God may be glorified through Jesus Christ, to whom be the glory and the dominion forever.
Okay. This is a strong suggestion, a command that we are to be hospitable to people without complaining, without grumbling about it. And this has been a thing that I have to work on at my desk, because it's not easy for me to be hospitable to everybody who comes. I get rather selective because there comes in a stranger, somebody who kind of doesn't feel right to me or look right to me, and I have a hard time being hospitable to them. I have a hard time being hospitable sometimes when I'm real crowded for time. And I generally treat the people I know best worst at that time. And it's this has been speaking to me for quite some time, and this is a thing that I'm working on, because it has to do with my attitude of warmth and receptivity and learning how to still be able to do my work and yet receive the people who come and not cut them off. And I hadn't learned the balance on that yet, because I used to just receive everybody and just spend all the time talking, then I didn't get my work done. And so I've gone the opposite way sometimes and cut off the people so I do what I'm supposed to do. And to understand that everybody has something of benefit for everybody else. Verse 10 says, use your gift in serving one another. And what you have been given has come because of the manifold grace of God, and that everything we have is not ours just to keep for ourselves, and we are to be good stewards of what he has given us. And then it's Jesus who's to be glorified by us and what we're doing and by the attitudes and atmosphere we give. And then one more verse, and then we're going to move on. 3 John verses 5 through 8. Third John. Five through eight.
Beloved, you are acting faithfully in whatever you accomplish for the brethren, and especially when they are strangers. You may bear witness to your love before the church, and you will do well to send them on their way in a manner worthy of God. For they went out for the sake of the name, accepting nothing from the Gentiles. Therefore, we ought to support such men that we may be fellow workers with the truth.
To me, seemingly, when we receive people, especially in this context here, those who are ministering in the name of Jesus Christ, whether you know they be evangelists or singers or BSU directors or students who come in for a retreat or whatever, and we minister to them, then we get to share in the rewards that they get because we're fellow workers with the truth. And it's been encouraging to me to be reminded that those who wash the dishes or who make the beds or whatever are just as important in the kingdom of God as those who stand up and proclaim the truth. And lots of times a proclaimer of truth cannot do that with ease or comfort if his own particular needs have not been met or if things have not been prepared so that he can clearly present the truth. And so sometimes when you realize that it seems like all you're doing is having guests in and all you do is cook and clean and change the sheets and that kind of stuff, it all is worthwhile. It counts. Although it may not be seen, it may not be recognized, it may not be the thing that's applauded, it still is important. And one thing I became grateful of, there was about 2 years ago, we had, I cannot remember who all was here, but I know that in a matter of 3 days, we had five sets of company, which included, I can't remember, something like 13 or 14 people. And all I did was change the sheets, you know. I said, but they're not dirty. Somebody just slept on them once. And I said, well, I wouldn't even dare let anybody sleep on somebody else's sheet. You know, if you want to choose to do that, that's fine. But I'm not going to let you come and have to do that. And so I'd take the sheets off in the morning, go to the laundromat at noon, go back, you know, working during the day, and then come home, make the beds up real fast. I had enough sheets that I could have fresh ones on for the most part. We made out pallets in the floor and everything. And one thing it made me grateful for is that I really wasn't in the Holiday Inn business, and my job wasn't just to change beds all the time. But it made me grateful that I had place and space and facilities so that people could come. And that God worked out all of the timing, because some of them came in after 2 o'clock and left by 6, 7 the next morning. And, you know, they were late on their way. I remember that group was from Illinois on their way to Glorieta. And I didn't know a soul of them, you know. So it was good, you know, to be able to have that kind of place. And that's the kind of place I'd like to have. Is that always, you know, it's the prophet's room here, no matter who the prophet might be. And do you know the story of the Shunammite woman and how she and her husband had nothing much to offer, but they recognized the man of God and that he needed a place to stay? And so they built onto their house a prophet's room, and what they call the prophet's room because it was the prophet who was going to stay there. And they fixed it with the bare essentials, but it was his, and he was warmly received and welcomed there whenever he passed through town. And, you know, God counted that as one of the top illustrations of hospitality because he recorded it in the scriptures for us. Abraham was very hospitable. Seemingly in the Old Testament, it was the men who set the pace in hospitality. They were responsible for the home. And even so today, the man is still responsible for the home, but it's kind of become like a woman's job to take care of the house, and she can decorate it however she wants to, and she can, you know, buy whatever food or that kind of stuff that she likes to entertain, and he may help select the guests sometime, you know, and say, well, why don't we invite thus and so over? But it then it's not really his responsibility, seemingly, in these days for what they do or how they do or how the food gets fixed or the dishes get cleaned up and that kind of stuff. But in the Old Testament, seemingly it was the man's responsibility, and he is the one who set the pace in preparing the food and receiving the guests. And to me, it's one of the strengths of a home when the man shares that responsibility, because I always feel really extra special and kind of more secure when a man helps take on that responsibility. And, you know, he's the one who greets me at the door and helps me with my coat. And I watch him be supportive to his wife in taking care of the food preparation. You know, maybe just putting water in the glasses or cutting the meat or, you know, whatever it is. But he's there ready to do whatever needs to be done and can entertain the guest as well as she can. If ever, ever you really want to do a real good study of hospitality, Next Topical Bible has a long list of verses and illustrations of hospitality in the scriptures. And it's really encouraging because it's not a big thing that's ever talked about, but it's a thing that is very vital, seemingly, for just carrying on God's kingdom. I put down on that paper what the dictionary says about hospitality and hospitable and who a host is. And I'd like to ask you about that thought provoker down there. Hospitality is expressed only in unplanned situations. Entertaining or entertainment is what is expressed in planned events. Is there a difference to you in hospitality and entertainment? And would you say that this statement is true?
Because what are you planning to have us over tonight? Yeah, I don't feel like you're entertaining us. Well, I think entertaining maybe is more me.
I'd agree with Kim. I think, you know, like if I were to drop over, let's say, to Kim's apartment, she wouldn't have planned this sort of thing, might come over, but she might have invited me in. She could have just told me that. She could have invited me in and offered me something to drink, and it wouldn't have been funny. Uh-huh. And I think that would have really been showing me.
Yeah, I disagree with the statement. I don't think it is a true statement. And in the book Open Heart, Open Home by Karen Burton Maines, it's a book about hospitality. And in the second chapter, she refutes that statement. And I have these three books that are listed here, so if any of you want to borrow them, you're welcome to, or to buy them for yourself. As when we started talking about hospitality, you named off that you thought it was warmth, and there are a list of other things here that I just put down that might speak hospitality to you. Can you think of any others that you might want to add to the list? Somebody mentioned patience one time as being a part of hospitality, and flexibility and thoughtfulness.
Yeah.
Availability.
Specific friend that feels very, very hospitable, and she's just always available. Mm-hmm. And when you go over, it's like she's just available.
Mm-hmm.
Just her waiting for
me. Uh-huh. It's really. Mm-hmm.
That might be part of the openness.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the most important aspect of hospitality is this thing that I call the you attitude, where you're thinking for the other person, thinking about her, him, and so that you're not having to be concerned about things or about yourself. And that's kind of hard to do because all of us are selfish by nature. And we're concerned about what makes me comfortable, what makes me uncomfortable. And sometimes if somebody comes early or comes late or they come in and need something right off the bat that's not part of the way you wanted to receive them and stuff, then, you know, you tend to turn inward to yourself, you know, instead of reaching out to that person to... And your thing about availability may be a part of that you attitude. Just whatever you need, you know, I'd be glad to make you comfortable. I really, most of the things that I can think about hospitality have to do with this warmth and atmosphere and thinking about the other person. And the whole thing that in my apartment, when I started decorating it, and I keep adding to it one thing at a time, you know, I find something else that I want to do, and I just play with them. I don't know anything at all about colors and sizes and arrangements and that kind of stuff, but I just play with things until they make me feel right. And see, when I'm, sometimes, this is real rinky-dink, but sometimes, you know, I start to reach for a glass, and I don't really feel like that glass. I feel more like this one, so I'll get it. And see, and tonight I played with the two kinds of glasses I wanted to use. And sometimes I wear clothes like that. It's the way I feel that day. And I know you can't run your life by feelings, but there are times, you know, when I think it is important. And like... I hate to draw attention to my stuff, but I'm going to because well, I want us to talk about them. But that arrangement over there, there were already nails in the wall. So instead of putting other nails in the wall, I used the ones that were there. Most of those things are hanging on straight pins. If you have apartment type walls, the straight pins will go through these things and hold up whatever you got. And, you know, and you don't have to have those big, bulky nail holes and stuff. But if I were going to do that, I would probably put some of those things closer together instead of so far apart. But I've never seen anything that had a big, heavy thing over here on this end. But I went on ahead and did it. And I'm not quite through, and I'm not sure what I need. But I played with verses under there, and I put squares, and really felt like I ought to have a round something, but I didn't have anything round, so, you know, it's not over there. But when I look at that whole picture over there, it goes from the floor up to the top of the picture there. I mean, the mirror. Because I put the candle there in the center so that it kind of fits between. Let's see, maybe I can. See, this fits. Fills up this space here, and this fills up here, and then this fits in here. So when I look at that, I see that whole thing. Now, I don't know if anybody else does. But when I walk into this room, I feel in that total thing and not just the stuff on the wall and not just the stuff underneath. And Pam noticed, reminded me of another thing I do, is I try to hide as many wall outlets as I can. I just don't like to see them. And so that lamp sits in front of a wall outlet. When I rearrange the room and I have... the divan sticking out this way, then there's a wall outlet over there. But I have generally have the coffee table there. And I have to kind of illustrate this. The divan is here, and that end table, which is tall, sits in front of it. And the coffee table, which is long and low, sits over there against the wall. And the lamp is still on it and has other little things on the table. And then Julie Klingler calls this my midget mirror because it's down low, but it filled in that space. And then I put a candle underneath it for the reflection. See? But, and it doesn't take much. I went to one of these home decorating parties, whatever they call them, and they suggested that every room needs to have a mirror, greenery, and a candle in it. And every one of my rooms had that without any problem, except I don't have a mirror in the kitchen. It has a candle and a greenery, but it doesn't have a mirror in the kitchen. And the hallway doesn't have any of the three, that little hallway in there doesn't have any of the three in there. But I got to thinking about that, and I thought, well, that makes sense. When I lived in Ardmore, I didn't have one plant of any kind. And one day my neighbor across the driveway from me, a little elderly lady, came in, and I never liked my place. And she just left on my kitchen table a little white plastic pot, a little rectangle thing, and it had hen and chickens in it, a little kind of cactus thing that multiplies, you know, all the time. And I put it in my kitchen window then above the sink, and I knew immediately that something else was alive in that apartment besides me, because I lived there by myself. And there was a different atmosphere when something else green and living was there. If y'all have any questions along the way, I'm going to kind of ramble now because I haven't gotten anybody to help me put my stuff together. I don't really know what people want to know and how they want to know. One of the things I think about is the towels and the way they're folded and how they're folded on the racks and stuff. And everybody likes to do theirs differently. Some towels are made so that the design goes down the very center. And most towels are made that way these days. So that, like Pam got one in a shower the other day that had butterflies on it. And I visualized that in a bathroom that didn't have any other decoration in it. And because of, if you folded it so that it was in thirds, you know, and the center design was there and those butterflies were showing and then the color stuff, she wouldn't need any other wall decorations. Those towels would be decoration enough. And I got kind of excited about that because I like things that do more than one thing. I think things ought to have more than one function. And the kitchen's my very favorite room in the whole house. And then I like bathrooms and bedrooms real well. And I like living rooms. But when I start thinking about the things I really like, I love linens, I love towels, and I love sheets. I like blankets that are pretty and nice and that kind of stuff. And why, I don't know, because there's no nobody to see them, you know. They're just functional. They're just useful. But I just like them. And I like kitchens. I like things that go in kitchens. I like decorating kitchens. I like kitchens to be light and cheery. And in our kitchen, you know, it's relatively large, but it doesn't have much light or storage space. And so I've added one light in there by the sink, and I traded my typing skills for Jack Holt's carpentry skills and got the buffet in there, and just trying to cure it up a little bit. One of the things about this is just a little housekeeping hint. Little things go farther in the way of food than big things. So if you come up and in your efforts to be conservative and to be, what shall I say, just thrifty, and you don't have enough to go out somewhere else, cut up whatever it is you have into smaller pieces or say you have just enough to make enough mix to make two pancakes. Well, if you make those little dollar size, you know, and then you can make four to a half dozen, and you'd have a lot. It looks like a whole bunch more. And I think about Verna Berkey and when the illustration she gives when some lady, mother, got down to having nothing in the house but the ingredients to make biscuits and Jell-O. And so she, you know, that's not quite the world's best meal, either in content or color or whatever. And so she dressed it up by putting out the best china and the silver and tablecloths and all this kind of stuff and made it real special and put candles around. And so when the family came home, they wanted to know, you know, who were the special guests. And so she said that her family was. And they got all excited because she exhibited this you attitude. See, and she set it up so that they concentrated on each other rather than on the food. And that's the way all meals are supposed to go anyway. You're not supposed to talk about the food. And I kept thinking about that tonight. You know, here we are talking about it. But I thought, well, there were some things I wanted you to pick up and learn from that while we're there on that. I told you the thing about the tossed salad, that you can make that a main meal by adding chicken or turkey or ham even to it would be real good. And you just, it's just layered. And then you let it set overnight and then you toss it when you're ready for it. So it's a do ahead thing and you're not caught at the last minute trying to do it. A man would like that. And the same with Mexican chef salad because it has hamburger meat and cheese and beans in it. And you have a whole meal in one there. A lot of men don't like casseroles, but, you know, you'll know about your man whether or not he does. But there are some casseroles that men like, and it seems to me the ones, and I feed lots of guys over here at different times, and they like things that have noodles in them or spaghetti, and they like things that, you know, they generally need some meat in them and cheese. If you got those three things in them, they pretty well like them. And you can have whatever vegetables, you know, you want. You can find all kinds of casserole dishes, which make things go farther usually. And I think one of the things that we need to learn, because the Proverbs 31 woman was conservative. She considered what she was doing and how she was able to spend her money. And when you go to buy just fast food stuff all the time, and just live out of macaroni and cheese boxes instead of making your own macaroni and cheese, then you generally spend a little more money and gotten less nutrition. And sometimes for the second time you need to do that. And you can use some of those same box mixes to put with other things. I found a recipe this weekend using the macaroni and cheese, you know, Skinner's macaroni or whatever it is, and mixing it in with a lot of other vegetables to make a cold summer salad. And it sounded real, real good. And I was telling the girls earlier that I tried to, in the summer, try to fix as many meals as I can without heating the oven. The smaller appliances usually are less electricity consuming. They're less expensive than your range or the top of your stove. Every time you have to heat, use one of your top range burners on your range. You got four. It heats up the whole thing. It takes a long time for it to really heat up because it's got all this space, you know, until it finally equalizes the temperature. So if you can use a small heating appliance, you know, use an electric skillet instead of the top of your stove, or if you, anything else that you can use, a smaller appliance is usually less expensive. And that'll help you save some of your money. I'm trying to figure out something else I can do because with the ozone layer up here, you know, with all this spray stuff we have, and it's killing the ozone on us, you know, we're going to burn up because we're not having this filtering system from the sun. But I spray pan everything. My mother does more than I do. She even pans the wax paper, and excuse me, when the telephone rings and you're the only one there to answer it and it's a long distance telephone call, what do? You got a house full of company.
We'll see what you do.
Well, it does depend on the situation, I think.
Generally, when it's a local call, I feel real free to say, can I call you back? But when a guy says, I'm getting ready to go to bed, and I just needed to call you, you know, I didn't know what to say or do. I didn't think I could say, well, let me call you back. Telephone interruptions are always a part of life. And I was sorry Vicki wasn't going to be here because she can help take care of that for me. You know, and I think that's another alternative. Lots of times if another family member or roommate or somebody can take the call for you and visit or pick up where you were in the hostessing. I don't know whether you know this. This just popped into my head, but generally, it's not a good deal for all of the host family, whether they be roommates or family, to leave and leave just the guest there. If you're in this situation where there's just one of you, you know, that has to happen in some instances. But at the table, don't the whole family get up and take the dishes away. Leave at least one or two there to visit with the guest. Yeah. So that you're thinking about them and still taking care of the responsibility. I gave you some suggestions on that page 3 of the hospitality of what you could do to help create atmosphere. And
Carol, could I ask you a question just as maybe what you and Vicki do? Something that Carol and I bring into is maybe people that come over and they stay a little late. How do I get rid of them?
People, huh?
How to get rid of them?
Yeah.
Well, like any graciously, I know, you know, the spiritual thing to do would be to give, I would think, and to give and give, but maybe any alternatives along those lines?
Feel free to make your suggestions.
The honesty of what
it's going to make the difference when you're married. Because, you know, you've got a responsibility to get your husband up in the morning, and you have to say goodnight.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of times, we'll just kind of swing the conversation to what's going to be happening tomorrow, and, oh, yes, I have to get up at 5, isn't that interesting? You know, and it goes over pretty quick, you know, but if you really need to go, it's a really big problem.
One of the things that I've not had to do very frequently, we used to have a girl who lived here who had callers all the time, on the phone and in person, just coming all the time. Well, I feel like in an apartment situation like this that it's everybody's responsibility to help entertain, but there you have particular responsibilities of your own, and so, you know, sometimes if they didn't come just directly to see you, you can excuse yourself and go about doing what you need to do. But there's an illustration that I got for this out of Luke 5. And now let's see. And I think I can find it better than RSV. Because that's where I just got it. And I never can remember the verse on it. But back, not long after I moved here, Luke 5:16, okay, about verse 15 and 16. The whole preceding thing in this chapter is it was a busy, busy day. Jesus had been busy doing a whole bunch of things. Healing people, calling people to himself, just a number of things. And in verse 15, it says that the crowd was coming to him, and they were pressing in on him. And it means that there were lots of people who had needs. there were people coming, you know, because of what he'd been doing through the day, there were people just like that who were coming to him. And in verse 15, it just talks about all of that, and they were great multitudes were gathering to hear him and to be healed of their sicknesses. And verse 16 says, but he himself would often slip away to the wilderness and pray. So Jesus didn't take care of every need that came his way, apparently. And the thing that I wrote down in my Bible is sometimes it is necessary to leave ministering in order to be revitalized and ministered unto yourself. And so I worked that out in practicality for these drop-ins who come in, and to let them know that I want them to come and that they are received, and to say, you know, but I have other plans, or I just cannot spend time with you now. You can figure out your own gracious way of saying it. And say, could we get together at another time? Nearly always the time that you plan to spend alone with the Lord is when somebody comes, when there's another interruption. And you say, you know, I appreciate your coming, or I want you to come, and but I already had another obligation or another responsibility. Can we get together at thus and so time? So that you don't say, shoo, go away from me and don't come back again. But it's that you had a priority and you had a responsibility and you need to take care of that. And but you can still think about the other person and not let them feel, oh, I bothered her, or I shouldn't have come, or I won't ever come again because I just bother her. And so I just say, you know, could we get together at thus and so time, thus and so place, or let me come by and pick you up in a couple of hours after I get through with this other responsibility. And you don't have to tell what it is. It's just like, you know, a girl turning down a guy's request for a date. You don't have to tell him what you're doing, you know, but just give thoughtfulness and consideration to the other person. Is that helpful at all? It's kind of hard to do. It's harder to do than it is to say. but it still can be done. And there are a lot of people who will just drop in all the time anyway. They just like to come be where you are. And so if that's true, well, then I start putting them to work. You know, there's some things that I need done. And, you know, do you want to go with me while I go do my laundry? Or would you do, you know, would you file these things in this folder while I go do this? If they just want to be where you are, then let them help do the things that are you.
I found that true with this one girl that drops in all the time. But I say, I'm going to go do my laundry now. You want to come? She'll tag along. I don't know why, but she does, you know. But I get my laundry done.
It's... If those people don't pick up the hint, then I assume that God has them there to learn from me for some reason or other, just to be around me. Because there are so many things involved in hospitality, I can think of a number of things. If you had some questions, maybe that'd be helpful. One time when I was doing this, a lady asked, what about smoking in your home? So what about smoking in your home? Do you want people to do that? Do you not want them to? And if you don't want them to, how do you ask them not to?
Going along with the whole way we've been talking tonight, if you were looking to make them comfortable, I think you would let them. But still,
it's real hard to handle.
My parents would be very uncomfortable if I didn't. I'd leave earlier. I know that's happened. My sister and her husband don't allow any smoking in their house at all in my mother's house. And it hurt her feelings very much. And really, I feel hard for witness to that. Because she felt like
she wasn't received.
Really? And, you know, and I can see that, and I respect that in their home. And now that they have a little baby, I can even see it in their, you know, lose their home.
How do they handle that when they
They just ask them, not to, and explain the reasons why. You know, because now they have a better excuse now. If there's a baby, they don't want her inhaling it. And, it depends on who it is. If it's my mother, Mom, it makes the curtains dirty, you know, all kinds of stuff. But if it's just gas, they just don't. Well, actually, Sue, her husband tells them, so my sister doesn't have to.
That's good. It's
excellent. You know,
yeah, he ought to bear the responsibility.
Sure, since it's really, he's the one that's real stickler for. And he says he just, it really tolerates his eyes. And he's kind of allergic to it a little bit. So, you know, if you kind of, I think if you kind of explain stuff, there's no smoking in this house.
But I think if you have like parents or something, I would feel I'd make an exception.
Yeah, I would too. But then again, I think that comes back to your husband because, you know, if they say no, then what can you do? You just let them tell. But, you know.
But there is a way of telling, I think, and it's real. Anything that makes me feel uncomfortable, I don't want to do, you know. So, one of the things that we came up with when this came up in another conference was we could ask them, you know, if they mind smoking on the porch or something. Because a lot of people who smoke are very aware now because of all of the publicity about non-smoking that, you know, there are people who just don't care to have cigarette smoke. Lest I forget it, cherry incense. Not burned. You don't have to light it, but just have it hanging will absorb the cigarette smell. I have a friend who does not smoke, and her husband does, and they share the same closet. Mm-hmm. And she was dying, you know, because her clothes were just, you know, filled with smoke and stuff. And she just keeps cherry incense hanging in the closet.
Is it like strips?
I don't know how hers comes. Mm-hmm. Somebody else told me that a bowl of an open bowl of vinegar would do the same thing. But I could just see that, you know, being knocked and spilled and stuff. But I thought how nice, you know, that you didn't have to burn the incense because that stuff just mm-hmm. penetrates you. And but just to have it hanging close to, you know, and that would absorb. I don't care for cigarette smoke either. And generally your friends who are, you know, are close to you will understand and will know that you don't smoke. But in the consideration of them, then I try to have something that looks like an ashtray for them. And there is, I've considered buying these and I haven't done it yet, but there is a little nut dish that Lennox China puts out that's real pretty. It's just a white china with gold trim and it looks like a little leaf and it would do for an ashtray. And see, and you can have those around and be decorative as well as serve the need if you want them to. And then if you ever want to have a fancy dinner party and have, you know, little nuts at a place or something, you could do that. But there are all kinds of pretty little ashtrays now that you can use. And the thing I use ashtrays for is to make candle holders and have one in there in the kitchen. So I have an extra one or two in case somebody comes by. And one of my goals is to invite all of my neighbors here. Well, my neighbors, you know, as far as I can tell, do all the things I don't do. And so one time we invited the people from downstairs when I first moved here. And they came to us and brought us, we invited them for dinner, and they brought us a bottle of wine. And I nearly came unglued. I mean, I was so narrow and so haughty about stuff. And I really was just floored. I did not know what to do. So I got to thinking about it and talking and asking questions about it. And wine makes a good marinade for steak. So finally, I hid it for the longest time and then finally admitted, you know, what had happened and how rude I was to the people when they brought it. I found out that you do not have to open it and you do not have to drink it when a guest brings that. It's your choice as the host or hostess with what you're serving, whether or not to serve something that somebody brings. When we went to their place, it was another story. But anyway, we had all this staff buy steaks. Buy their own steaks, and then I marinated them, and we charcoaled them out here in the backyard and had a big party over here. You know, so we still use, you know, stuff that it was, it makes a real tender, tasty meat. But the smoking thing and the liquor thing is anything that somebody bring you, your response ought to be for them. And you ought to know what you're going to do. And as much as you can pre-think something so you know how to handle it, the better off you are. But you can't always do that. Sometimes you get caught without knowing. What is something else? Another question or something I can help you with?
No, I have no problem with that. I have people over and we'll eat dinner. And then if we go into the living room to sit down and I know the dishes are all over the sink, it doesn't really drive me. And if I feel comfortable enough with people, you know, they're just good friends, they come over all the time, we'll be ready to go in and we'll all help them. But if not, sometimes that can really bother me whenever, like, later we'll get a snack and everybody will be back in the kitchen. There's plates all over. How do you handle that?
How would you all
handle that? It doesn't bother me too much. Just walking back in and me seeing it. But when everybody else is going to go, be going back through that area.
Well, one good thing is to, when you're preparing the meal, to wash your dishes as you go. So by the time you sit down, all the pans and stuff that have even been washed or in the dishwasher. Yeah. So the only thing that would be out would be
a lot of girls don't know how to do that, though. They don't know how to clean up as they go.
That's all right. That's usually just taking care of it. It's just all the plates and stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yes, yeah. I wonder if you could set your dinner up and get some pastels.
But you said there's people going back in and get ice and drinks and stuff like that. But,
well, I don't know.
Maybe in a small apartment, it's kind of hard
to
do differently. Well, one of the things I had to learn in that same thing was to give up my rights to having everything perfect. Mm-hmm. And my deal is I want everything to be flawless and in place and let you see it just so-so. And you can't always do that. Tonight I toyed with the idea, should I go ahead and put up the food because I know that the jello's melting and I know that the vegetable salad is wilting and the bananas are turning and the brown sugar had already absorbed moisture. By the time you got here, it was fresh, soft, nice, and stuff. But when I got to it, it was already getting hard, and it's getting harder because it's absorbing the moisture out there. So I was thinking, what should I do? Should I suggest that you all come and help me do this, put this away, cover it up, or whatever? And I decided that the thing that was needed tonight was the time, and then the food would be okay, So tonight we needed the time so y'all can hurry and go because I know that I want you to stay, but I know that time is real of the essence around here. It's not ever one of those generous commodities. And so that was my thinking there. Lots of times people offer to help, and when they do, it kind of depends on what's going on and who's doing it. But I've gotten so that I kind of let them help do that. The night the fellas came over here, if you ever entertain a whole apartment full of fellas, girls sit and wait to be served, but guys all jump up. You ask them, do you want ice cream on your cake, and they all go into the kitchen, and you got them all standing around, and you can't do it real nice and orderly. They just swarm, and I forget that every time, but they always do, They always just come in there, and so a couple of the guys offered to start washing the dishes, and I thought, okay, go ahead, because I really didn't have any room for anything else, and they really wanted to do it, and so two of them really offered and really knew how to do it, and so they were standing over there in the sink scraping dishes and putting them in the dishwasher and stuff, and while somebody else was doing something else, and I just kind of stood there and gave directions, so if they offer, I'm getting so that I let them do it. Kim said that made her feel at home when she, if they let her do something. And one time when I was getting ready for this thing, I fixed up a questionnaire and gave it out to a bunch of people who'd been around me and either been in my apartment or been at the BSU where I'd done things or just at my desk and stuff. And they critiqued me on where the weaknesses were and where the strengths were. And one girl in particular was offended because I didn't let her help. And so I had everything in order. There wasn't anything to do, but she didn't like it because she wasn't able to do anything. So I got thinking about that. Now, what do you do? And I think I wrote on this sheet, that one of the things you could do is to just invite them in to visit with you. You know, no, you don't have to stay in there. You just come out here and visit with me while I just check everything, or while, you know, I mean, you can put the ice in the glasses, or you can pour the water in, or you can go find some little something that I may need, or just hand me a spoon out of the drawer or something, you know. Anything that gives you a place there. Because a lot of us, and girls in particular, it seems like our major need is security. And so when we are sitting and not knowing what to do, or whether or not we're really at home in a place, then we need something to do. We need something to hang on to. And so, you know, if you just handed me a spoon, then you feel, you know, secure and stuff. But I needed lots of stuff done tonight, so it wasn't just... one of the things, just a little thing that for decoration, nearly everybody has juice glasses, and you can buy these little votive candles, you know, real inexpensively at Walmart. You can get them for 13 cents, and Target, they're 15, and other places, they're 39, 49, depending on the fragrances and the brand of the candle. Walmart's are real cheap, but they still burn nicely and stuff. But if you just overturn a juice glass, set it up so the bottom's up on top, and put that little votive candle on, then you've just got a candle setting, you know, for a small table or for a dinner table or whatever. And I've used little dessert bowls the same way, just turn them over, because it's real hard sometimes to have little votive candle holders. And you can use what you have, see. And if you spray it with Pam before you start burning the candle, then it just peels right off without sticking. Recipes on colored cards. Keep an extra toothbrush or two handy, a new one, so when overnight guests forget theirs, well, then you have one. And they come on sale every so often, you know, for 25 cents a piece or $3 for a dollar. And if you have, because people are all the time forgetting their toothbrushes. Have I showed all of you how to swirl the napkins so that you can save space?
And I was trying to do that at Amy's shower, and I'm going, they said something about putting a glass on it. And I couldn't do it.
Okay, you turn the glass down. You just turn it over on its side.
Oh.
And just use your wrist. Twist it like this, and then flip the stack of napkins over and twist it again, and they just swirl out. And it makes them easy to pick up. They're attractive, and it saves space as well as time. And the bigger your stack is, the more little stair steps it has, you know, swivels.
That's great. That's not how I would have put it on. That's why I didn't turn it up.
But I used to go through and place them all like this, you know, and then you just stack them back together.
You want more or less?
They pretty generally, you know, go back without a whole lot of problem. But that's a handy thing to do if you're going to entertain lots of people or at your reception, or if you're not. One of the reasons we changed to cloth napkins is because of the expense of paper. And cloth napkins you can just dump in. And I've not paid more than 75 cents for any one of the napkins I have. Napkins cost generally at a minimum $1.25. And they go all the way on up to, you know, $3 and $4 a piece. And I try to find them on sale and go to, there's a warehouse market thing that comes here once a every 3 or 4 months. And I go to it and can pick up napkins, you know, for 75 cents a piece there. Candle rings, flower rings for, you know, anywhere from 25 cents up to $1 or $2 that usually cost $3 and $4. You can buy all kinds of gifts at half price, towels and linens at half price, luggage, dishes, whatever you want and need. It's a good place to keep, to buy gifts just to have on hand. Pam, can you think of anything else, Rogers, when you were here that I should bring out or anything you've thought of since then?
That's a hard question.
Or any of the rest of you. Kim, I think this is your first time here, but Pam and Cheryl. I say use what you have and don't feel afraid or embarrassed about what you have or don't have. You know, if you're concentrating on the other person. One of the things I did in this apartment when I first got here was to go through and pray over every room and every corner and every item and ask God to use it for His glory and to make it a place of warmth and welcome and peace and security and happiness for the people who'd walk through those doors and who'd come share here. And so, you know, when you go into a new place, I think I'm a pretty strong believer in going into a place that doesn't have a Christian heritage. And I'm praying for whenever I leave from here that there are Christians who come here because there is a heritage in this apartment. Because the girls who lived here before me were Christians. And then I came, and every other girl who's lived here has been a Christian. And God's peace is a part of this. It doesn't have the turmoil of, you know, Satan here. And so if I were to go into a new place, I would go through and pray over it and to sweep out, so to speak, all of the tempers and the bad words, the anger and the strife and the tension that had been in that apartment before I got there, and to pray over that God would show me where to place particular items and that His love and joy and peace and kindness would be exhibited through the things. The furniture here I've been renting now for over 6 years. It is more than paid for, but it's not anything I would have chosen myself. But it's here, and it's usable, see? And so even though it's not what I would choose, even though the colors may not match in my long-range scheme, they still do the job. And that's it. I know all that was. The towels, most of the things I can think of are, I think, written on the paper. Pam's been asking me questions, you know, about grocery buying and meal planning and all that kind of stuff. And some of that fits into the hospitality angle. But if I can help y'all at any time with anything you come up with, I may not have the answer for it, but I keep finding out that I know more than I thought I knew. Y'all can help me figure out what to put over that car over there. I can't figure out yet. Come in.
Put over where?
That little oval car over there, that's an antique car.
Okay, sure.
Okay. I wanted the frame, and I can't figure out what needs to go in it to to fit over there. I finally thought flowers of some kind, but I don't have a picture or any drawing flowers. Almost. Do y'all have any thoughts or questions or comments?
Do you always offer your gift? something to drink or
when they come in?
When they come. Do you think that's necessary?
Well, pretty generally, I guess I do, don't I? Yeah, I don't always have something to eat, but I'm learning more about nutrition, so I'm trying to, so that we can be healthier than the average American. And so I'm trying to fix things like that. I hadn't learned a whole bunch yet, but I have learned some recipes. And I guess even a cup of cold water offered in the name of Jesus has its rewards, you know, because it ministers to the person. Sometimes it's, you know, it is needed. Sometimes it just, you know, says, I thought of you. I'm trying to learn how to be more gracious about that and to make it more a natural part of their coming in. It used to be, oh, you know, would you like something to drink type thing. Because I was trying to have to, I was having to remember to offer it. And like yesterday, when we went to visit these fellows, they really didn't know what to do with us when we got there. They wanted us to come, but then they didn't know what to do with us when we got there. And of course, guys don't particularly care to go to our apartments, but girls just love it. And so when we walked, got up the stairs, and which is creepy. I mean, just walking straight up forever, and you walk up into the clouds, and it's feel real queasy. Got inside, and they said, you know, made a big to-do about offering us a glass of water, and because that's all they had. You know, well, that's fine. You know, and water is good for you, and we ought to drink more of it. And so I just said, thank you, and we stopped and visited, and they really, I don't know how we got into it or where we went or anything, but we finally got to go look through their apartment. And they were pleased to show it off, and they'd done some things with it, you know, that were creative and unique for them. Yeah, some guys, you know, have a lot of ingenuity, taste, and creativity, and some don't have as much. Can you think of anything, Vicki? Or, I mean, anything that you'd think of would be a help.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about.
It doesn't make, that's what I'm saying. No. It doesn't make any difference. Just anything that you'd think of. Because we work at this all the time, trying to figure out, now what could we have done better? How could we have altered this? What would have improved this? And see, one thing I know would have improved if I'd gotten that smoker cleaned up and out of the way before y'all got up the stairs, but I hadn't, so. It's almost clean. All I lack is the bottom part.
Well, I appreciate what you shared.
The biggest thing I think about hospitality is the attitude and the atmosphere that you set just because you think of another person. That's about all that I know unless you just prompt me. Because I wrote out a bunch of stuff and I wrote these notes and you'll find lots of typographical errors. But I wrote these out one night during Vespers and Bill, Jan, ran them off after Vespers, and I got them loaded and packed in the airplane the next morning, and took off for Lincoln, Nebraska. I couldn't either. It's the only time in my life I've ever done anything during Vespers. But then just down to the last. Oh, well, I mean, I had thought out, you know, a whole bunch of stuff. It wasn't like it just, but my mind runs on a typewriter.